Why, hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Building Code. I'm Zach Vitovich.
And I'm Charlie Burwisall. I appreciate the different voice inflection on the intro there.
Trying to mix it up for our listeners. Don't ever want them to get
bored,
complacent, you know?
Or complacent.
Keep them on their toes.
Absolutely.
Surprise the people.
Yeah. Surprise the people with awesome guests.
That's an expectation. We always
expectation.
Have awesome guests. It's us. We got to keep it fresh. We got to keep this ball.
You're right. We are the ones that are lagging. We got to keep
that's
it
right.
up.
If we're not careful, they'll replace the host again.
Yeah.
No. Just kidding. Who we got today?
Today we have Katie Kath, partner and interior designer at JKath Design, Build, and Reinvent.
That's right. Big friends of the Builder Trend and the Building Code.
We're big friends of JKath.
Yeah.
So a mutual friendship here. Super excited to have her on. She has been on before, close to a couple years ago. So a bit of a hiatus, but excited to have her back. Always a pleasure talking to her on the design side of the house, which is not an area we spend a ton of time on the podcast talking to. So when we do, we make sure we bring in the big guns.
They're always some of my favorite episodes, though, because they just have such passion for the artistry. And I just have grown to really admire the process and how much care goes into it to making a home more than just a home. It's almost like a portal, a gateway to an experience when you go to see some of these spaces. So she's an absolute professional. She's an expert. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get her in here. Hey, Katie, welcome back to The Building Code. It's been a while. We were just recapping. It's been a couple years, which is crazy. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks. Thanks for having me back. It must have went well a couple years ago.
That's right. You know, we ran the tape and you're like, you know who we need? What's Katie Kath up to?
Yep, we got to get it back.
Right.
for the listeners that were not fortunate enough to hear that first interview, would love for you to just kind of do a quick debrief on who you are, where you came from, where you're at now, a little bit about Katie Kath.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm a partner at JKath Design, Build, and Reinvent. My husband and I own our higher end residential remodeling company here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we do quite a bit of work here within the Twin Cities, if anyone's familiar with what the Twin Cities is and what that means. And then we also own a custom cabinetry shop. That's really the foundation and the roots of how we got started. And we have a design arm as well. So we do a good portion of architectural planning internally until we get into major structural issues, and we'll bring in the right people, but we also work closely with structural engineers. And then we do all the design. So we do all interior selections. And then we do that for primarily our focus is current renovation projects, but our design team can get out quite a bit ahead of our field crews. So we are doing a lot of design out of state that we will never touch construction on. So when we're trying right now to kind of close the gap on if we're doing, for example, we have a project in Pennsylvania right now, and we really know that our cabinets need to be in that house. So how are we going to make that happen? We do have a retail line with our cabinetry, but it's not quite as big as like a whole kitchen or whole house. So we're dabbling in how to scale that. What do we want to do with it? Where does that go? And what does that mean?
It's really interesting. You know, I can't recall. Did you guys start out as a design build, or what was the evolution of JKath, you know, as far as like moving across state lines and having your cabinetry line? What was the origin?
So it started as a cabinet shop.
Cabinet shop.
Back in 2010, that didn't last long. I actually was not here or part of JKath in 2010. It came around a few years later. But by the time I came in the picture, my husband had already branched into the build piece. So I should say in the early days, So I won't get into all the details, but cabinet shop first, then into the design build. I came into the picture, then we started adding in the design pieces. And from there, the company has grown just based on, you know, the skill set or the needs that we need, right? Architectural planning has been a huge one. We do not have a licensed architect on staff. That's a good qualifying question people ask. But if that's a deciding factor, we will bring in said licensed architect to, you know, create some comfort zones around that. But we know enough. I, Katie Kath, don't know all the details, but our team, our field crews, my husband, who's very knowledgeable, knows enough about what we're doing from a floor plan perspective to be able to get a good portion of that done in-house. And then our design team is all really skilled in the drawing as well. And we use CAD for all of our drawing. So we can get pretty close to where we need to be by doing a lot of internal sketches to kind of do new layouts and really, which is like, I'm getting off track, but To really assess early on, what is the scope and therefore what is the budget? And then can we align to move forward? So we have a whole separate pre-construction process to just to really dive into, are we really even a fit for this homeowner? And so it's worked really well for us as we've scaled to bring that in-house so we can manage the timeline of you know, how much of that space planning do we really need to develop up front just to be able to set a budget and then decide how we're going to proceed, or maybe it's not a fit for us, or maybe it's not a fit for the homeowner at this time. Are a couple of the options that we'll run into.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was, well, first of all, you said you're getting off track. I'll let you in on a little secret. There is no track.
I was going to say the same, like, no, this is great.
So we're always on track and at the same time, always off track. So don't worry about that.
That's our brand. Yeah. You know? Okay,
perfect.
Always on and off track.
Yeah.
I was excited to talk to you again today because the design side specifically of the design build is always really fascinating to me. Specifically in the past year, Zach and I have both bought a new house, not together. We both bought separate houses.
Announcement. Charlie and I moved in together. We've got a commune, the whole thing. No.
But I love looking. I love buying a house. I love shopping around for houses. And in Omaha, it's a really cool combination of kind of the older, you know, houses that were built in the 30s, 40s, the older feel, and obviously constantly expanding. So you have the newer feel as well. I love looking at them and seeing the differences between the two. And so I like go through phases where I'm really hyper-focused on design, and then I don't think about it again for a long time. But I remember our last conversation with you was really informative and interesting to me. So excited to have you back. And I know one of the topics that we want to talk about today, kind of a broad topic, but interesting to hear your perspective, is just how do you fluctuate, or how do you maintain a steady state through the fluctuation of design trends? So what is a passing phase versus what is a tireless element, as it were? And how do you kind of navigate staying on top of where the trends are at? I need to formulate a question here because I'm just rambling.
Yeah, that's okay. Got but one. Yeah. I can go off track a little bit and fill in.
Perfect. Thank you.
So it's a great question. And, you know, I think the cliche answer would be there are no trends, but there are. I think there just are. And we lead with a lot of our new client inquiries with customized interiors. It's what we do well. It's our niche. It lets us have both feet into potentially older homes, homes with an architectural interest. Maybe not. I mean, we love a newer home too. They're easier to work on. It's kind of a good break for our team. But then how can we add some of those character moments within the home? And if we lead with that, we're not necessarily looking at the most trendy or latest and greatest fashion, if you will, for the home. We're already sort of prioritizing customization. Our cabinet shop is a huge piece of that. Architectural millwork. Classic, timeless, natural stone elements. You know, where can we use a marble or stone tile, soapstone? People might call that trendy, but soapstone's been around longer than any of us and our ancestors, for that matter. It's been around for one of the longest materials in the market. So if that's what we're leading with, then we're looking at what are the kind of the hot must-have items that people are really excited about. Wallpaper is a big one. It was maybe one room, maybe the powder room, or maybe an accent wall in a pantry. We could be wallpapering up to 4 or 5 rooms per house right now.
Wow.
And so I think that is a challenge for us, is to really kind of help balance. When is it too much? You know, when are we starting to clash? Do we feel like the pantry is visible from the dining room? Do we have competing patterns? So we kind of sometimes have to rein in a little bit of what's enough, but while having a tasteful moment. Saturated tones or color drenching would be another way of referring to it, as just painting everything in the room one color, the walls, the millwork, the cabinetry, maybe your window treatments, or your furnishings might lean in that same color. It could be really rich and moody, dark black, browns, olive tones, or it could be, you know, really bright and cheery, red, pink, yellow. I think those are really fun, and that could be a moment that we could see in a smaller space, which feels a little bit safer. But really at the end of the day, I think it's about creating a really collected space. And within some of that space, we're going to find a few trends. I think it's just like fashion. Do you guys know a lot about fashion?
You tell? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Yeah. Pants and a quarter zip. Yeah. Fashion.
Yeah. How do you feel about like golf polos?
Yeah. Oh, well, I give my husband a hard time because he's in his early 50s and it's like all 50-year-olds wear 3-quarter zips, especially 50-year-olds in construction. So next time when you guys go out to the builder show, pay attention to the floor, and it, I hope I'm not offending anybody, but it's the construction uniform is to wear a 3/4 zip, probably with a company logo on it as well. Yep. So I always laugh because it's like very predictable, but at least we know how to gift around here. We know what the guys think.
Yeah. It's speaking of timelessness, consistent. Right. Yeah, always don't have to think too hard about the right thing to get someone. That's huge benefit. One thing I was going to kind of play off of, it's interesting hearing you talk about your process and the way you go through, and there's got to be some education that happens for your customers. What's that dynamic like? Are you telling them like, this is a timeless design, and they're like, oh, that sounds great. Or do they come to you and they're like, they have a very strong vision and like, this is what I want. And you're kind of like, is that what you want? Are you sure that's, and you kind of have to find that balance. What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, it's the hardest part of what we do. Thankfully, we're not new into the business. As I mentioned earlier, we've been in it since 2010, mm-hmm. but the design piece has really evolved in the last probably 7 to 8 years. And with our portfolio, we've attracted a client that wants what we have. Mm. So great. So the conversation is usually pretty easy early on. I think where it gets tricky is once we get down the path and we may have be between a few different options, and it's very easy for homeowners to say, I want some of this and some of this, and let's put it in a room together. Well, that doesn't always work. But also design is very subjective, right? So it might work in their eyes, but maybe not in mine or one of my team members. I mean, inevitably I've edited down some of the work a team member has done. And I have said, no, I feel like if we make these few changes, it feels very JCath. And sure enough, they'll present it and the homeowner will undo everything I did and go right back to where my team member started. So I think just having awareness that this is a very subjective process, but definitely exercising the muscle on not super easy conversations. And that's generally what I do for our company anyway, be it design or communication breakdown on site. Are we having issues with a plumber? Is it a JCAT team member? I'm usually the one that steps in and resolves a lot of those conversations. So it's easy for me, but I've learned that is not easy for most people to help guide people in a path. But we really just lean into we just try to use the word recommendation. It's a JCAT recommendation to do this. However, if you really love this and this is what makes you feel good about your space or brings you a lot of joy, let's do it. And then we decide in the end when we do some marketing assets. It isn't so much that we wouldn't capture marketing assets. And sometimes there's a very JCAT branded moment that we still won't capture because maybe we've already done a version or two of that. So we're also having a different lens on what do we want to capture that we feel great about, that right. we're proud of, and that also may be a little bit different than something we've already done that feels like very on brand for our company.
No, I love that. And as you were talking, I had just jcath.com pulled up and I was scrolling through your portfolio there. And that's a good point that I never really thought about of like, how do you cater towards your clients while at the same time maintaining a brand that you want to showcase to future clients as well too. And just from an outsider's perspective, I think you do a really good job of that. From a marketing perspective, like each one has a different feel to it, but you kind of sense the commonalities across all of them and it feels very conjointed from a product perspective, which I think is, I'm sure, a very difficult line to toe.
Thank you. And, you know, one thing I'll add just to be real, because the listeners are probably all saying, well, what if you just need to cash flow? Mm. I mean, the reality of running a business, sometimes we just can't be that particular and we have to just say yes, especially as we're getting going. We just have to say yes to the work. And that's okay, right? And sometimes we just need to say yes because it feels good. The homeowner's a right fit. It might align with everything, but potentially the aesthetics may be a little bit disaligned. That's okay. I mean, we're not too proud to do it. You know, if everything else feels great, the budget's there, the homeowner feels like a great fit for us. We might need to layer in some work to keep crews busy. Our cabinet shop is a big component. We need to keep that busy. We need to keep the machines on and the lights on, 40 hours a week. But that doesn't need to be reflected in every right visible asset that we create.
One of the things I want to circle back to, because I'm really interested in your personal perspective, you brought up fashion. Do you use other areas that are adjacent to construction design to inspire your design language, if you will?
Well, So a lot of our brands that we work with, the manufacturers, they all rely on fashion as kind of their early intuition for what's a lot of the plumbing companies do. House of Rohl, Brizo, Delta, GE. I mean, if the Cave is portion of the builder show, you see fashion everywhere in this past year. I mean, fashion was everywhere, the colors, the texture. So it isn't so much that we're bringing in fashion to our conversations. I mean, occasionally it hasn't been out of the question for us to create a design board and put in some fashion. We'll kind of read our homeowner a little bit and see if that'll check off or not. But I think just personally as an interior designer, and I'm not a trained interior designer, so I didn't go to school for this, but it's been a calling of mine my entire life. I've always been interested in garments and wearables and fabrics, and I'm an avid knitter. I knit all the time. So like, I love the texture of wool. That translates to what we're putting into homes. I'm a big fan that all carpeting should be 100% wool. And some people say, oh, this feels scratchy. And I'm like, yeah, you're the guy that can't wear a wool sweater. My husband's one of them. He like literally just like crawls in his skin when he puts a wool sweater on. So there are different components, I think, that carry through. And not only is it a visual space, but it's very much like how does it feel? And same thing with like countertop materials and tile, and how does the tile feel on your feet in the shower? You know, like the different, some of the artisan tile or handmade tiles can have a different, with the install pattern, can have like a varied height, or the grout lines could fit in differently. And textured walls are we love doing textured walls, and I feel like that's a very timeless trend, and that can vary, right? So every decade, the textured wall might evolve depending on what's in style. It's like shiplap paneled walls. We've seen a lot of those, you know, go horizontal. It feels a little more farmhouse. If we go a little more vertical, does it feel a little more coastal? Painted shiplap walls, wallpaper is a textured wall. Now we're seeing a lot of wood. Everyone's going back to like, just like a lot of wood paneled walls and ceilings, which is really fun to see. And it doesn't need to be paneling. It can be applied moldings. It could be a plastered wall, as plaster's coming back too. And so we're, again, going back to the saturated tones, we're seeing a lot of primary bathrooms with plastered walls and everything just being very monochromatic throughout, not just a plaster kitchen hood, which is what is a little bit safer for some. And it's kind of just putting one toe into the plaster arena. But yeah.
Really interesting. And you mentioned something else, you know, different sources. I have kind of two questions that are not related, but and they're not on the script. So I'm just like going off
here we
the
go.
Wall here. Yeah, yeah. Just buckle up, everybody.
I'm here for it.
The first one is geographically. How much does that influence the design process? So, you know, in Minnesota, are you, you know, seeing a lot of historical neighborhoods that they want to maintain that feel and vibe, or are they looking for those, like, you know, I'm in Minnesota, but I'd really love to be in the Hamptons, you know, and they're trying to bring that into their area. Like what is that experience like for, you know, the way design gets influenced by where you live?
Yeah, great question. So here in the Midwest, right, we're a little far behind. So it takes a little bit longer to get out to what the coast or even the bigger cities are doing. We can go, you know, just down to Chicago, which isn't far, and see things evolving a little bit quicker. I would say we have not a huge historical area here in the Twin Cities, but we have a pretty decent sized one. And we do a lot of work in homes that are approaching 100 years old, and that has become our niche. And so we do get a lot of inquiries for that type of work. Interestingly enough, a little bit off topic, we at the end of each year do a deep dive on where all of our traffic is coming from. And then not only traffic, but how's that converting? And we have a big marketing campaign that we invest into Pinterest. And so, and I could geek out on that all day long, but we, you know, our intention of writing blog posts isn't really so much that we can put a newsletter out there that we do, because we have the content. So we're trying to repurpose it in, you know, multiple different facets, but putting it out in Pinterest is getting that larger national audience. And not only that, but a longer audience, right? So like a pin on Pinterest can live, have a really good life for 6 months. Well, we all know Instagram might be 24 hours, if even that. And so our content is just, it's having just a longer shelf life on Pinterest. But when we look at what's happening on Pinterest and what it's converting to, and the two ways it can convert is through a purchase, through our vanity collection, which we sell online, or hiring us to do design only work. And we are targeting, for whatever reason, Northeast. So that's our, and so then we just kind of did a graphic. We did little pins throughout the United States, and we kind of drew the lines on where we're going. And it's a heavy flow out to the Northeast. And I haven't done the exercise to figure out what does that mean, but I just keep thinking it's that historical component of the homes. And so whatever decor or style we're putting here in the Midwest, our friends out East are taking notice to it, probably because that's the style of home that there's predominantly out East.
Yeah. So then the other thing that kind of popped in my head in relation to the design trends and like, how does that work? You mentioned the vendors and the people supplying the materials. What is your influence on them? If they're influencing you, do you have relationships with your vendors, and that even what materials are they bringing to market?
Mm-hmm. So we have had some opportunities. We've done some close work again with Brizo. I was super lucky a couple years ago to go out and do their New York Fashion Week with them. And it was probably an experience of a lifetime. And we did a lot of research and development, and they rolled out a lot of prototypes for items coming to market or still in kind of ideation. And so there's a group of us nationally, design team, and we came together and did a lot of, you know, pencil and paper and writing down thoughts and ideas and helped weigh in on their next few releases. So it was really fun going out to the builder show now, Arcabas, and seeing some of those designs evolve. Other than that, I mean, we have close relationships with a number of appliance companies. There's a few other plumbing companies, and they are all very generous and do a lot of trainings on location. So they're usually getting us on a plane and flying us to wherever their headquarters are located. And then we're doing a deeper dive into those, but they aren't, I would say, like, a think tank opportunity doesn't arise as often as it would be really fun for that to happen, but not as often as it does.
Sounds like Zach and I need to go out to New York Fashion Week.
We would fit in so well.
Well, this whole time I've been thinking, like, when you're comparing the design elements to fashion, I'm like, am I decorating my house in a way that's a little too quarter zip? Do I have a quarter zip house? And now I'm kind of rethinking every purchase I've made in the past year since I bought it. Like, I needed Katie Kath to maybe sign off on this first.
We just start sending you pictures like, how does this setup look? And I'm like, looks like it'd be
appropriate for you to hang artwork in your house at the height of like a 6 foot or 6'2" human being. So like everything's at like 72 inches off the ground. Mm-hmm. And we do that. We walk into homes. We're like, oh, there's the artwork.
that's a little too real. That has happened actually, where I was going to be a good fiance and hang some stuff up for my, for Audrey. And then she came down. She's like, why is it so high? I'm like, what are you talking about? It's eye level. She's like, for you. And I'm like, well, yes, I'm the one looking at it. So I guess she just won that argument. If she's listening to this.
Hanging pictures has got to be a top five divorce reasons for America. Like, everybody I've talked to, it's led to some sort of conflict of we need a Katie Kath to like arbiter just to like save people's Charlie's relationship. Don't just keep your mouth shut, Charlie.
Yeah.
Just do what she wants. Katie, it's so much fun to talk to you about this. I always, whenever we talk to designers, design build firms, it almost feels more like art. Is probably the closest descriptor of it, because it isn't something that I'm very analytical. It's very like, I don't know, I have a bookshelf. It does what I need it to, it holds books. What's the problem here? Whereas, you know, this whole experience of designing and having the eye for it, you know, if you, for our listeners out there that are like not part of the design build community, or, you know, are interested in getting into it, what's kind of like the core philosophy around design build that maybe someone should be kind of thinking about when getting into this type of construction?
Sure. So so that's evolved for us. You know, originally, I don't think my husband knew what design build meant when he started. I think it was just, I don't even know, to be honest. I've asked him, he's like, I don't know. I was just told that was the name and that's what we did. And that was 15 years ago, before design build became as redundant as we see now. But certainly our focus is to spend that pre-construction time, and probably longer than most construction companies, on the design process, which if you don't have it in-house, a lot of companies will outsource it, right? And some don't, right? I think as people are getting up and running and still kind of grassroots, they're letting the homeowner make the decisions. And that's when I came into the picture. Homeowners are making a lot of the decisions. And that's a great place to start. I don't think you have to start with the design piece, doing it in-house, but that's just become the value add of what we provide. And our client isn't necessarily doing their first renovation project. We actually are in a season of life. A lot of our homeowners are potentially doing their last renovation for homes that they'll be in for retirement, and their kids are grown and moving on. So it's just a different stage of life. But again, it's developing the scope as it lines with the budget. And it's really hard to do that without having so many placeholders. We're trying to get those allowances really tightened up. So we might be within 3% of the total project cost. And then, so it's a lot of work, right? I mean, it could be 6, 8, 12 or more months, depending on the project, going back and forth on all those selections. And then we're done with that pre-construction process. We're delivering a full resource guide. The homeowner owns all of that data. It could be a floor plan, all of our full detail 2D drawings, specific to all the cabinetry that we build and design. But really, the homeowner could take all of that data and have a different builder, which is how we can work out of state as well, or a different cabinet team build from those plans, and then a resource guide. So everything is source linked. So if we end up being their chosen build team, we can easily just purchase everything for them, which is our model. Or if they turn it over to a different build crew, they or their builder can click through and purchase everything. And then we'll get as detailed as to how many square feet they need. We've got the grout figured out. We've got shower drains. We've got Schluter. I mean, every single thing you would need to go into that space, we've thought of it, and we've sourced it and linked it. And we've become so processed in that, almost to a point now we've swung the pendulum so far that our field crews can sometimes get paralyzed in moving forward because they might be missing a detail. And so now we're trying to have conversation internally about how to unwind that a little bit and create some flexibility around, you also know the answer to this. Like, we've created a plan for you, but we're a team and we'll all own each other's decisions. And if you've got white Schluter in the rest of the house and it was missed in one bathroom, it's a pretty good assumption there's going to be white Schluter in that bathroom too. And that's a bad example because we actually don't use a lot of Schluter, but it's a good product.
That makes a lot of sense. No, I love that evolution story of every business is very unique. You try to get to this point of everything systematized so much that it actually ends up on the people doing the job, make them question, like, their critical thinking kind of goes away a little bit, right? Exactly. I know we're not focused too much on the business process in this episode, but I think they're all kind of interconnected. It's like you've grown so much, you've got this great process, your power user builder trend. But it can, every business, no matter their maturity, is going to have a problem with something that needs to continue to be optimized or grown.
That's right.
We're about out of time today. We really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. I think actually that last kind of where we were going with that is perhaps episode 3, where we talk about, you know, how your guys' business process evolved as you grew and changed your business priorities. It was great having you on today. It was a fantastic conversation. There's a lot for us to kind of recap. And for what it's worth, we have a case study on JCath on our website that we'll link in the show notes. But where would be the best place to check you guys out otherwise?
Website's a great place to start, jcath.com. Otherwise, Instagram is where we focus a lot of our daily time and energy. So that's jcath_designbuild.
Love it. Well, thank you so much again, Katie, for the time and the perspective. Really beneficial and great episode. So appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, you guys. Have a good day.
Mr. Burt Whistle, we just had Katie Cath, JCath Design, Build and Reinvent. What are your thoughts?
Well, Zach, I have a lot of thoughts, other than I'm having a bit of an existential crisis that my home is a golf polo or quarter zip equivalent. But no, she was great.
It took someone to tell you that, huh?
Yeah, it did. And now it's all I'm going to be thinking about. No, I actually think, you know, you said it really well on the intro on these types of episodes are just, I don't know, motivating, inspiring. It's just a different type of attention to detail and thought process that we typically think about when hosting this podcast or designing a home or building a home, where you have to just think at a higher level and be kind of one step ahead into what's really popular right now, what's going to be popular, listening to the customers and what they want, but also providing what you say, recommendations, mm-hmm. the JCath recommendation. Mm-hmm. on what they think would look best in the house. It's an area where I have absolutely zero expertise. So listening to someone like Katie talk about it is always extremely informative for me.
Yeah, I'm guessing she's not like filling the house with stuff from Target. So I mean, we start there, right?
Well, you know, Target does great work.
Yeah, no, I'm not hating, but trust me, like, we're a big Target family. I'm just saying. Yeah. So one of the things that I was thinking about, I read a book a few years ago, it was called Home, and it discusses the evolution of how houses came to be, going back to the original first shelters. I'm like, it started with a fireplace, a hearth, and over time, every room has a story. Mm-hmm. And I always feel like with designers, and when we talk about trends and design and the things, there's always a story of how these things came yeah. to be. When you look at houses 100 years ago, like, why are some things consistent and always timeless, and why are others just kind of temporary, but then they come back around.
Yeah.
We didn't get into the eras that we're in right now, like what influences we're seeing. I'd love to have her back to
Yeah,
of course, to talk more about that. And it would be fun to have like Katie Kath and Piper Stromat and, you know, Morgan Molitor come in and just like educate us on, you know, what good design is, but really educate our listeners, but really us, because there's so many little threads you can pull on about how things came to be, and design is at the cornerstone of like how that translates into your home. And it's
everything.
Just
yeah.
So cool to like dig into an expert's mind about it. So thank you so much, Katie.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. Definitely appreciate the time. And Zach, thank you.
Oh, Charlie. No, the pleasure is all mine.
Thank you. Great episode. Great guest. As always, this is The Building Code, and I am Charlie.
And I am Zach.
We'll see you next time.
He said it. We'll catch you next time.